this is John G calling from Hawaii. Hey, just wanted to say thanks for getting me started on podcast. Yours was the first I'd ever listened to, and I've been listening to quite a few now from you, and out of the vault from your Bikepack Canada interviews and Corey Ryan's, and that's been great. A lot of great information, and I just listened to, completed a couple. One was an old one with Janie Hayes when she dropped out of the or pulled out of the Tour Divide in 19, and I did as well for different reasons, but I really enjoyed listening to her perspective of it. And you know, when it's not fun, it's not fun. If your head's not into it, it's not into it. And you know, I read it or listened to her, I read her blog on it, I've listened to others like Josh Cotto, and even JP talked about, you know what, you should be able to have fun out there. And I think for me, for now, touring it is a fun way to do in segments, at least anyway. And you know, I read a lot of people from the Tour Divide say, oh man, I never saw that part because it was nighttime, or I really wish I could have camped here or stopped here for something to eat, or taken in that view a little bit longer, but man, I had to go. And I think that's where touring suits me, that I love to stop, coffee, beer, pizza, whatever. And anyway, I was listening to you sitting around the room with five or six guys talking about the BC Epic and the Lost Elephant, and I really thought you guys popping beers, laughing, having a good time talking about the route, and some guys saying, yeah, we cheated, and we cut this part of the course or that. And you know, when you're out there for the social aspect and just having fun, why not? Why not do what you want to do? I mean, that's what it's all about, in my view. But unless you're at the pointy tip of the spear, then you know, you're racing and you're doing it for, you know, maybe the true reason, the altruistic reason. But for the fun social aspect, I like the point of the guy saying, yeah, we kind of got stuck in Fernie at the pub, and I'm having beer, and man, I love Fernie Brewing Company, and my favorite coffee shop is there in Fernie is Freshies. And man, stopping at those places and enjoying yourself is really a lot of fun to me, and makes it so hard to be a racer because you don't have time for that. You can't do it, but I like it. Anyway, I'm here rolling along the railroad tracks, which used to be, it's a narrow gauge track that used to haul sugarcane from the fields and to where it was would go into production, and then you know, extract the sugar from it. And now it's a the historic Hawaii Railway, which is pretty neat, because here on Oahu, most of the time, if you want to find dirt to ride on, you got to pack your bike in the car, drive who knows where to find some trails. And I just don't like putting my bike in the car. I like to ride from the house, so I'm lucky to ride live right along these tracks. And so anyway, back to Janie's discussion, talking about wanting to get more, and yours, wanting to get more women involved in this type of sport, and I think is a great thing. And she talked about people asking her, well, aren't you scared to be out there? And she said, no. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I am. She said, why don't people ask guys that question? Aren't you scared to be out there? Ask me, I'll tell you. I was scared to death at nighttime by myself. And because living in here in Hawaii, we don't have predator animals, except for people, crackheads that live along the beach or a little bit out of sight. You know, you got to be careful about that. And so that scares me more than anything here in Hawaii. But anyway, so yeah, living in Hawaii, I don't get to do this, but maybe once a year. So I don't get to go out and practice like so many others that live on the mainland, close to trails, close to, you know, having a 1 or 2 day trip from home, which sounds really nice. But anyway, it's okay. I'm riding in what we would call in Hawaii a cool 75 degrees. So what am I bitching about? But it's all right. Anyway, I'm looking forward to a lot more podcasts from you, and I'm still going to be working off that vault with all the old podcasts you have, and they're all pertinent because they have so much information. It's just amazing. But anyway, that's it for me today. Thanks again, and I'll talk to you later.
Hello again, friends, and welcome to My Back 40 and the My Back 40 podcast. I'm your host, Steve O'Shaughnessy. Nice timing. Like it. Hope you guys are doing well. And I want to thank John G for his awesome voice intro from Hawaii. It was like minus 20, like a couple weeks ago, but I think we're on the other side, but riding there sounds lovely. And I wanted to leave that entire voice intro in because there's just a lot of takeaways in there. I thought John just shared a lot of the details that are a lot of the takeaways that he got out of those podcasts he listened to. And you know, I really appreciate that voice intro. It really actually brought me back to a lot of things, like, you know, that whole idea of mindset and riding your own adventure, riding your own ride. You know, setting reasonable expectations, and then if you're not into it, you just, you know, you don't have the mindset for it to be able to flip that switch and just go from race mode to kind of just a touring relax mode, at least you're enjoying it, right? You know, I've quit a race before and it sucks. It's, you beat yourself up for days, if not weeks after. And if I had just said, you know what, I'm going to lower my expectations. I'm just going to ride my bike. And you know, the other thing too, is just to sleep on it, you know, before you quit anything. And that was advice that I was given before I quit that I didn't take. And, yeah, you always have to kind of give some thought. And you know, when you're sleep deprived and tired and hot and hungry and thirsty, you're not thinking straight. All you're thinking about is survival. And, if you get some food, get some rest, hydrate, and just get your body back to, you know, its regular operational mode, your mindset will often flip back and you'll succeed. So it's just a great piece of advice, I think, there. And the fear thing I thought was really interesting as well. And it's true that, you know, if someone were to ask me about a race and why I'm doing it, and it's more like, you're crazy and why are you doing that? But I've heard from lots of women, like Jenny Tuff and Janie Hayes, like, oh, are you afraid? Like, it's people are treated a little differently. And it's interesting, if someone were to ask me that question, it's like, are you afraid? I'd be afraid. I would admit it in a second. So I think I don't know, how can you not be a little bit kind of on edge? You know, you might be kind of comfortable in that outdoor environment, but there's always this kind of like noise in the background, just this kind of fear and anxiety in the background, or you can have really acute fear. Like myself on an event, and it was in the middle of the night. I had my head down. I was just pushing up the side of a mountain, and I kind of raised my gaze and I saw those two big green eyes, and I think it was an elk, but my low burning light, I couldn't see what it was, and I freaked out, man. And, talk about fight or flight. It was just crazy, but the thing took off but still it's like, yeah, you have these moments of fear. And I think every time you have these moments, you get through it, you persevere, and it makes you stronger next time. And just the exposure that you get from being out there and pushing your limits, it just makes you braver, I guess, when you go out. You know, it may not even cross your mind that there's anything to be afraid of. But yeah, fear is real. And I think that's kind of why we do these things too, is just kind of to help us overcome some of that fear. So yeah, John is one of my supporters and I thank him for that voice intro. Like I said, I wanted to leave it all in because I'm super pumped that he got into listening to podcasts, and he's really excited about the information he's getting and the community that is built around My Back 40 and just the bikepacking thing in general. And And I'm super pumped to pop that into the beginning. And you know what? I've got a lot of voice intros coming in. Like when it rains, it pours. I'm so grateful for those coming in, and you can keep them coming. So if you want to send me one, you can whip out your device, record me something, and send it to myback40podcast@gmail.com, and I'll get it on the show. And don't forget, you can include feedback, guest suggestions. And also another great way to support the podcast is just give me a 5-star rating and a review on your favorite listening platform. Helps me grow. And it helps me grow and reach more people. And yeah, I thank you for that as well. So yeah, thanks. I'm grateful. I just want to say a quick thank you to some of my sponsors. I want to thank Dynamic Cyclist for sponsoring the podcast. And if you head on over to Dynamic Cyclist now and check out their programs and you use the code MB40 at checkout, you're going to save 25% off the programs. What are these programs? Stretching and mobility programs. And in the last couple months that I've been doing it, I've benefited so much. I'm very tight in my hips, just from riding bikes all the time. And it's basically all I do, which is unfortunate. I need to pick up some other activities, I guess, but it's what I do. And, I'm finding that the hip exercises are really, really helping me. And, I think it could help you too. Makes me feel stronger on the bike. I'm more balanced on the bike. I feel like my strain is lower. My body's not working as hard because it's functioning mechanically better. So my strain's actually lower, which means I can push a bit harder, go a bit further, and recover better. Recovery and sleep has been amazing since I've been stretching kind of with a bit more discipline. And yeah, I think it could benefit you too. So head on over to dynamiccyclist.com. Again, check out their programs, go on a 7-day trial. And if you like it and you dig it and you pull the trigger on it, please use the promo code MB40 at checkout and you're going to save 25%. I also want to thank Cycling 101 for being my longest supporter of the podcast. And there's a new promo code for you. We're all training up for something in the summer, whatever that may be. And if you find that your training program is not doing it for you and you'd like to ask some questions to an awesome guy, an awesome coach with tons of experience, you can reach out to Ryan Draper at Cycling 101 and you use the code VIP50 and you're going to save 50% off a consultation. Now that's awesome. It's like a no-brainer. If you're not seeing the results in your program, you need to change it up and you need to contact Cycling 101. So don't forget VIP50 at checkout. And you are going to save 50% off that consultation. I also want to thank Rollingdale Cycle for supporting the podcast. Super pumped to be working with Dale. And you're going to see in the future some pretty cool stuff between my legs very shortly. So really looking forward to doing a couple events on this new bike I'm getting built. And I'm super pumped to share that journey with you. So I want to thank Dale and Rollingdale Cycle again. Go on to his website, rdcycle.com, and look at the beautiful works of art that he's building there. I think you're really going to dig it. All right, let's get to the podcast. Today on the podcast, I bring you Matt Musteller, Powder Matt, at Powder Matt. Powder Matt is a co-founder of the Kootenai Outdoor Recreation Enterprise, CORE. It's the CORE Initiative, a project managed by the Kootenai Outdoor Recreation Society, incorporated in February 2019, and is based in Kimberley, BC. CORE is a nonprofit, grassroots organization dedicated to makers and creators in the outdoor manufacturing sector. The Kootenais encompass portions of four major mountain ranges, the Western Rockies, the Purcells, the Selkirks, and the Eastern Monashies. Within these ranges are hundreds of lakes, rivers, glaciers, 10,000-foot peaks, some pretty awesome gravel too, by the way. The region includes four national parks, 75 provincial parks, and countless year-round winter and summer recreation resorts, backcountry lodges, hot springs, championship golf courses, and far-out destinations renowned for world-class hiking, skiing, snowboarding, kayaking, mountain biking, and climbing. Kootenai communities like Golden, Invermere, Fernie, Nelson, Roslyn, Kimberley, and Revelstoke are rapidly becoming recognized as having some of the planet's most outstanding and untouched mountain wilderness. The CORE Initiative wants to bring creators to the region and stimulate the economy of these small mountain towns. What better place than the Kootenais to set up shop and create awesome gear tried and tested in some of the most beautiful and rugged terrain on the planet? In this podcast, Matt shares a little about himself as a young boy and the events that inspired him to live his best life in the outdoors. We discuss the importance of moving through nature and the positive impacts that communities of outdoor enthusiasts bring to the region. We also chat about the value that these communities bring to the region and how CORE is making it a no-brainer for future companies to set up shop here in the Kootenais. And without further delay, I bring you Matt Musteller. it's just a community, right? So
right.
The earth is so small right now.
Yeah, totally.
It's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, and how are you seeing, I don't know, just not to bug you too much on the podcasting, but how are you promoting your podcast, and how are you getting more awareness and growth, and how are you seeing that, as you say, coming along, but slowly coming along?
Mostly through social. I mean, I have a love-hate relationship with social media.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could probably talk at length about why it's so detrimental to a lot of different people.
Yep.
But that's really the only method I have at this point. I don't have a lot of capital. So what capital I do generate, you know, I just got some hats.
Nice.
So I'm going to, cool. You know, and then before that, you know, I got some, look, I'm all decked out.
Yeah,
today.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I had some t-shirts. And
worldwide audience is watching it now.
Yeah, right. So, you know, it's kind of like, it's just a fun project right now. And, mm-hmm. and I get a lot out of it too, right? I get so much out of meeting all these people and like folks like you and talking about their experiences and I just get a lot out of it. So it's, you know, not only spreading information to everyone else in the world, but also just giving me meaning and, you know, helping me grow as a human too. Like,
right. Yeah. Right. And you're seeing though, like as you're reading out or reading and seeing other podcast stuff, that, you know, obviously there's been explosive growth, in it. You know, there's some great success examples out there, that we know, and crazy numbers and money and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But it's always like there's for that small percentage. I always think about, you know, because I think about it a lot for how small community, you know, become, you know, make it happen, you know, and what is that, you know, the ingredient is it that massive Instagrammer finds you? Is it that massive, media promote, you know, or is it 1,000 different ways, you know, that slowly over time it just percolates and like a good coffee, you know, you slowly make it onto people's breakfast tables. And but you know, I'm constantly for my own self as a content creator too, you know, I wonder, because, you know, I always thought, oh God, if I just do one, you know, Globe and Mail piece, that'll be it, you know. Then I thought, oh, that didn't do much. Then, oh, okay. Then if I do like Bloomberg has 40 million people. Okay. That, yep. Great. So, okay. What's next? And, you know, it's like, it's interesting, you know, and that collaboration from COVID, is one area where I see has gotten so much better. You know, it's a real positive that's coming out of the pandemic for me that I see. And so maybe even looking like for your own self, how you collaborate with other outlets to share, you know, your podcast and getting on those podcast lists, you know, and okay, hey, so, you know, that probably is probably pretty important too. But what other community outlets can share your podcast or can even come on to help support your podcast too, I guess is another way to look at it too. You know, we're looking for a podcast too, by the way. We're thinking about it. Did Kevin talk to you about it?
Yes. Yeah. he mentioned that it's just kind of been backburnered right now.
Yeah.
And then I'm recording now, by the way. I don't know if this is going to be okay to throw out there, but, I want to do that. I want to be that guy.
Yeah.
Right? I think what you guys are doing is really, really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so people who are listening will know it's the Kootenai Outdoor Recreation Enterprise. And basically it's a stimulus, right? You're trying to stimulate, vendors, manufacturers, and businesses to come to the Kootenais to set up shop. Is that basically, you know, the high level description of what you guys are doing?
Yeah, Steve. Well, why don't we jump into it? We'll get into the. Let's go.
Okay.
I mean, how much coffee have you had?
You know, I wanted to tell you too. I used to roast coffee.
Oh, good. What's your favorite?
I was a roaster for Kicking Horse for about 5 years.
Nice. And which is your favorite? Kick Ass.
You know what I really liked before? No, I don't like Kick Ass. Actually, it's not
why?
My preferred. It's a bit too dark. I think a lot of the nuance in the coffee is just basically roasted out of it I think, a little bit. But people prefer it, right? I think a lot of people dig the more chocolatey notes. I think that's what people are used to. One of my favorites was, two of my favorites that we stopped doing when I was at Kicking Horse was, we did a single origin Ethiopian.
Okay.
I can't remember the origin. And then we did a single origin Sumatran.
Wow.
And those two are so diametrically opposed, right? Like the Ethiopian was like having a mouthful of blueberries.
You're right.
It was just crazy and floral and really nice acid. And then the Sumatran was like licking asphalt. You know what I mean? Like it had this really deep, tar, earthy kind of, they're so opposed, but I really dug them because I a good coffee taster will be able to probably pull the nuance out of whatever formula is in a recipe, right? If there's like different Central Americans and then, whatever that's in there. I think I got to that point, you know, through cupping where you can start pulling, especially when you're cupping around people who are really good.
Right.
And sometimes all it takes is for someone to just go, boop, do you taste the grapefruit in that? And it's like, oh yeah, I can kind of taste grapefruit, but your brain isn't like tuned to think of grapefruit being in a coffee, right?
No,
but it's
no,
there.
It's not.
It's there. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's crazy powerful, isn't it?
Yeah.
That messing with the flavors of the earth.
Yeah, it has the same terroir elements that wine does, really. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I remember watching, this is a bit of a tangent, I remember watching this this show, a documentary, and it was about becoming a sommelier. And these dudes would sit down at their final exam, and they'd just take a sip, spit it, and they could basically say, okay, it's a this, it's a that, and they could tune it right down to the farm it came from. Like in France, it was like boop, 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 bonk. And that's where it's from. And then most of the time it's like, yep, that's where it's from. It's like, what? How do you do that?
How did you do that?
How do you do that?
It's like the golden retriever or German shepherd at the airport finding the $10,000 bills.
Yeah.
In, you know, some freight shipping container.
Yeah.
It's in there.
Yeah. It's so
bananas.
Wait. So yeah, a bit of a tangent there. So
yeah, no, that's good. I love it. So yeah, let's rock and roll. You can do your little intro if you need to now, so you know where to start.
Nope, just do the just go. Yeah, I drop right into it. Yeah, I just go.
Okay.
Yeah, do it.
Let's rock and roll.
Okay, so, core.
First let's step back because I think it for context and how we came about to found CORE, Kootenai Outdoor Recreation Enterprise.
Can we pause one moment?
Yep.
How do you pronounce your last name? Because we haven't even used it yet.
Yeah, Mosteller.
Mosteller, because I was thinking most stellar.
Mosteller, yeah. Well, you know, that, at Powder Matt is for Instagram and Twitter, social-wise, primarily go through by at Powder Matt. But,
cool.
So let's step into this.
Yes.
Why? You know, why the outdoors? For me, why the outdoors is so important and how it shaped me and my purpose. I think it really starts back when I was very young. I was a super fat kid when I was young. The feeling of low self-esteem, no self-confidence, isolation, not doing anything. It's tough. It's really tough. And then one day a family, that, you know, was just looking for gas money, invited me to go on a ski day. And, so they loaded the old station wagon up, and I think they knew all along that I wasn't skiing, and, they had the gas money. They got to the ski, parking lot, the ski hill, they unloaded, they all left. So I was sitting in the frozen landscape in this old station wagon, and you breathe enough, the windows freeze even more. So I opened the door, and just sitting there, a little fresh air came in, and you know, the classic really frozen landscape of a ski hill parking area where people were slipping and sliding, and you know, dirty, and all, it was just classic stuff. And all of a sudden, this arm is just extended inside and grabs my arm, came in the door. And it was the ski instructor, and he extended this hand, you know, extended a hand that basically changed, certainly changed my world, And I think, you know, from the standpoint of the ski instructor, this hand is a real symbol for me, helping hand. And he goes, "Hey, kid, what are you doing?" And I say, "I'm not doing nothing." He goes, "You want to learn how to ski today?" And he grabs me, takes me out of the car, takes me over to the rental. I can still remember the crowded little rental center, and it was a shack, really. Got me all geared up, took me to the top. You know, there was no fancy lifts during this time, just old T-bar and rope toes. And I'm on the top of the rope toe, and he told me a few things, shared with a few things, and then he goes, "You got it, go." And I headed on down the hill. I just went, boom, down, I'm going. And that just totally changed my world. I mean, all of a sudden, this whole powerful feelings, to me today, it still gives me goosebumps, but this freedom, this joy, you know, I can do something surge through my mind and body. And I've never, you know, never before had felt those feelings, and nothing had provided that level of good energy to me before. So, you know, I think this was my world. You know, I left from that experience saying I'm never going to do anything different. This is my world. The outdoors and skiing provided me a way forward in life. You know, so from there, I needed to share this. I knew that there was a powerful good, you know, that I had felt from being outside, and the benefits that you can gain from being outside, and there's so many, you know, whether it's just the walk in a forest, calm, the uphill climb or grind on your bike or scramble into the alpine, you know, obviously the massive fitness benefit, but also the power of I can do this. I am moving myself all by myself to these heights or to this place, and that powerful feeling of accomplishment. There's also the whole elements of the cold, feeling cold, feeling lost sometimes, but coming back from those feelings, coming back from feeling cold, coming back from feeling lost, coming back from feeling out there, those are powerful surges of self-confidence and accomplishment, and feeling of what I would call that, hey, I ain't gonna let anything get me down, and also the whole thing of humbleness. You know, when you're really cold in Mother Nature's environment, God, it's you know, there's a powerful awe that you have for, you know, the situation you have, you know, and your own personal survival and all of those feelings, you know, and there's a powerful feeling when you return from it for simple gratefulness, you know, just, hey, my heat in my house, incredible. I'm so fortunate to have that hot water instantly. Wow. That's, you know, these are the small things that when you are outside in a wilderness environment that you never, never take for granted. And so you feel, I think, this great humbleness. I think you feel this great gratefulness. I think you feel all the other things that spin off and cascade off of spending time outside. So, you know, and I think for me, one specific thing that came out of the community of skiing is simply that community. You know, there's a powerful community, and skiing isn't unlike any passion sport. You know, rock climbing has a powerful community. Mountain biking has a powerful community. But the things that come out of community that a lot of people may not learn other ways are care. You know, people in your ski community care for you. I mean, whether you're out on a road trip and you need a couch to stay on, or you know, a meal or you know, support, someone that listens to what's going on in your life. You know, all of those things that also cascade out as you further go down into your passion community. And for me, that was skiing. I learned that people care for each other that way. You know, you're only as good as your word. You know, that it's better to do things that, that matter and do things that are meaningful and that are good, both for those others in your skiing community, but also for the actual community where you live in. So you take care of your place. And I think that's, you know, a super important element of this as well. And I think, you know, when you're part of that community, it builds in this cooperation and collaboration, and you feel when someone's not, when someone's down, when someone is out of work, you know, the impacts, everybody kind of tries to pitch in where they can. So those elements. And so then as I moved through the skiing community, living in these mountain communities and these mountain towns, you also saw that the impact of, you know, in many of the mountain communities over my time, I saw the impacts of, we're waiting for the next mill, you know, to open, or we're waiting for the next mine, or the railroad has a strike going on, or whatever it may be that impacts those communities. And there just wasn't enough legs of the table to support the community. If they lost the mine or the mill, you know, it was for some community, it was a complete devastation. And there are examples of the ones that fought back to come back, or a mill did eventually open back up. But I just thought there had to be another way. And so when you look at this landscape in the outdoor economy, and now we're seeing it obviously at this time and place, you know, massive interest in biking, massive interest in hiking, massive interest in camping, massive RVs, all of these elements. But in those early days, you know, for me, where I saw this example was in the U.S. for many states that were in the West, outdoor mountain West, like we'll use examples like Oregon, Colorado, Utah, Montana. And what was happening was that they were seeing this surge in interest even before COVID of outdoors, and they were seeing it become really vibrant and relevant in their mountain community. And I think it's, you know, from my standpoint, watching them then say, okay, well, let's take it a step further. Let's create something, an entity that can help facilitate further growth in the outdoor, responsible growth in the outdoor economy in our community, in our region, or in our state. So we had the first of these outdoor economy incubators, outdoor economy job creators startup in states like Colorado, Oregon, Washington, and Utah. And the first two really were that had taken it to the next level really were Utah and Colorado. And as I saw the stats come out of it, you know, and now if we are fast forward, you know, it's a $900+ billion industry, the outdoor economy in the U.S. It's bigger than the forestry industry, bigger than many other sectors. So it's a real player at the table for job creation in the U.S. And I'm going like, to me, it just hit me like really right. Boom, smack in the head with a big 2x4 saying, well, what the heck? What are we doing? We've got the most beautiful landscape in the world in British Columbia. We've got the most incredible backyard for R&D, for testing gear. We got this incredible wilderness that creates these most unique people filled with passion and creativity. You know, and so why aren't we doing this? Because we've got the most incredible brand landscape. So if a company was creating something here, say ski touring gear, you know, well, no better place to talk about it than the Powder Highway, you know, and build a brand around that for the world market, because we're known as one of the best places in the world to ski. We're known for one of the best places in the world to mountain bike. We're known for these incredible rivers for whitewater pursuits and for fishing and some of the best fly fishing in the world. We have these incredible lakes and mountain valleys and forests. So
full of gravel roads too, like just gravel mountain roads everywhere, right? For bikepacking and cycling. It's amazing.
Incredible gravel roads, incredible opportunities for bikepacking and cycling. I mean, you are so right, Steve. It's just mind blowing how awesome our outdoor backyard is. And so, you know, I had this idea, and I talked to Kevin Pinnock about it, and I said, you know, we need an outdoor economy incubator in the Kootenays. We need it now. But really, there wasn't. I did some presentations and talked to councils and some mayors, and you know, no traction. Everybody was waiting for, oh, hey, we're going to get another mill, and so we had the people that couldn't move forward, and they were still stuck, you know, in the way it was. And then we had the other community saying, oh, we're going to get the tech industry. They're going to come here in droves, and that's going to be our deal. And not that those communities can't get, you know, it's not, we're not against other forms of economic job creation for the communities, but I just didn't see it. You know, I saw the tech community thing where you see where these hubs are getting created, and they need hundreds of engineers and hundreds of really highly technical skilled people. And the only places that have all that people, that critical mass, are bigger communities. And we don't have, you know, we have small towns in the Kootenays and small mountain towns. So we're not going to have 500 engineers living in one of our small mountain towns. You know, it just wasn't going to happen.
I think on top of that, too, is that all these companies, you know, there's no infrastructure for a lot of those ideas, where what you were saying before is, we're in BC in the Rockies. We already have the infrastructure for outdoor recreation stimulus, right? So it's cheap.
Yeah. You know, we have Mother Nature has provided us the best infrastructure in the world right in our backyard. And so this whole thing was, okay, so what do we do, you know, and how do we do it? And the elements, really the starting blocks was to get an individual in government to really see the light. And Mayor Don McCormick here in Kimberley, boom, you know, the first meeting and presentation to him of the concept, he's like, yep, let's do it. And he got it. And so that gave us some incredible traction. And then we've got this great board board members that are inspired, passionate outdoor people all themselves and passionate gear makers and engineers too. So, you know, we have this right group of people, and the whole mandate for us is, how do we create outdoor economy jobs? So small mom and pop outdoor gear makers to locate in the Kootenays, and how do we facilitate that? And better yet, these outdoor jobs are green economy jobs. So it really makes sure that, you know, these jobs transform the economy, you know, these are the ability to power recovery with green jobs in the Kootenays is super powerful sauce. So we felt that was number one. The second piece of this thing is an educational piece. You know, we also saw, you know, as you travel the Kootenays, you know, lots of people hear stories about, oh, well, my kids couldn't stay here. They had to go away, you know, and we thought, well, why can't we create a pipeline where these kids can see it too? Because there's so many kids on the local ski hill, so many kids on the bike, out riding their mountain bikes. They're enjoying this recreation here in their backyard. And then, boom, got to leave, got to go. And it creates so much more expense for them and all these other elements. So why can't we work with a local college? So College of the Rockies came on board to start the next steps of, let's create an educational job force training program for the outdoor economy. How to build that lightweight backpack, how to create and build canoes for long canoe journeys, how to make mountain bike parts, you know, you name it. If one of our gear makers that locates here needs to hire people, then we create a practicum, a course around how to build that gear. Because typically these small gear makers don't have the time to train anybody. You know, they're so engaged in building and designing and creating their company that it just, they don't have the time to train somebody to come up to help behind them to actually make the gear. So we've got the pipeline ready to go in this training program where we'll be training the youth of the Kootenays on how to make the appropriate gear. And then they'll have jobs with those gear makers that operate and live and make that gear right here. So the craft gear makers who live here will be able to have future employees. And the last piece is really around advocacy, awareness, and support. And when we took an inventory of the Kootenai region, there's over 30 gear makers already here. It's powerful. It's so cool. And they're making all kinds of stuff. And it's everything from canoes to lightweight backpacks for the long journey to bike packing bags and parts to skis made right from wood, harvested and cut right here in the Kootenays, to snowboards, to fly fishing gear, to climbing gear, to lights, to technology updates and innovation. You name it, gear is already being made here. And so really raising the awareness for those gear makers. And we have on our website, we got some great features that are showcasing the various gear makers that we have in the region. And they're just incredible people. And we want to create as well the craft gear trail through the Kootenays, where you can actually go and meet and connect with these gear makers too, because their stories are so powerful. So to hear a story from the gear maker, how or why the gear is made this way, you know, what was the impetus for it, what was the need for it, and to be able to actually buy it right there. So, I mean, the 100-mile gear maker, I mean, we've got in our region, we got gear makers that make all kinds of stuff, so people can actually shop for their outdoor gear needs right in their backyard as well. And we felt that was super important. So we're creating green jobs, and we're creating the future workforce, and we're building awareness and assisting in the advocacy and needs to support the gear makers that are living right here and creating jobs right here.
That's amazing. You know, I wanted to look at, I just went over to your website for a second. Just maybe give I'm having a hard time scrolling here. Hang on. Kind of wanted to look at some of those makers actually. I'm disillusioned with Mac.
Oh, that's good.
So like SK2 Design, Continuity Craftworks, Zapped Outfitters, I don't know how to pronounce that, Ash Fireware, Freestone Fly Company, Trapper Snowboards, Pro Board Design, Base Camp Innovations, Instinct Skis, Francois Sylvain, I'm not sure what he's doing, Soft Goods maybe?
Yep.
PJ Hunton, Northern Teardrop Trail, like trailers? Dude, I didn't know those were made in the Kootenays.
Yep. Coolest trailers ever.
Wow. That's pretty awesome. They're scattered all over, like from over towards Salmon Arm to, like, you know, obviously Kimberley Trail. Like, they're all over the place. That's awesome.
You highlighted some really cool ones. We've got so many different makers and at all different stages and levels, right? I really urge everybody to go to coreoutdoors.org. So that's K-O-R-E outdoors with an S.org, and go to the makers section and look at all the great people that are making gear right here. It's powerful stuff, and it's really amazing. And for anybody, I mean, I know there's lots of people that are that live in the Kootenays that they themselves love getting outside, so they can understand a little bit about why and how. I mean, really, this thing, craft gear made here, it's like we're the hub for these outdoor makers because of what Mother Nature has provided. Our natural landscape is so powerful. So it's like, you know, LA is a hub for music, you know, and urban music, and urban music came out of there because that community was a hub for creating that and shaping that and forming that. Well, Mother Nature has helped us and it shapes us. It doesn't make it easy. These craft gear makers have to work super hard here. You know, we're far away from materials and resourcing. You know, we want to help with some of those elements, but they got to fight for it. So that's why it makes the gear that they make and so much better. you know, it's harder, it's grittier, it's raw. And when they get an iteration of some little tweak to something that they're working on, they go out their backyard and give that thing a test like no other place. There's no place like this place on the world. And so with that, people that buy their gear can really, really appreciate that, this gear has been given this very incredible run through, and that it'll last. It'll withstand whatever the user is going to be throwing at it, and it'll be worthy for them. You know, and I think we can't stress enough that Mother Nature's landscape has really, really shaped our gear makers, gets the creative juices flowing, gets that innovation. Kind of creates a world all on its own. You know, we're in the backwater in some ways, and that's good. It's a good place to be because you're not comparing yourself necessarily. Although you can see what is out there in the outdoor gear economy and check out what others are making and doing, but then you can retreat into your lab. And kind of the mad scientist approach and make something that's just like, oh, wow, well, this doesn't exist. So I'm going to make this, and this thing's going to be just kick ass. And it's going to be, you know, like no other out there. And that's what our gear makers are doing. They're really setting the bar super high. And they're unique individuals in this incredible mountain landscape.
And I think what's important, too, is that a lot of these people, they, like you mentioned a couple words before, they're passionate. They're so passionate about it. And to know that these passionate makers are say making something and then taking it out in the backcountry and abusing it, right? And then bringing it back. My experience through, and I don't do it often. Like I'm one of those people, I was raised, my dad was always like, if you're going to buy something good. Because if you know, you could go and buy this shitty thing, right, and you're going to get a few weeks out of it, and then it'll fail, could fail in action when you're out in the field, which sucks, or it could just eventually fail and wear out and break. Because I think a lot of these more mass produced things, I mean, it's great on paper. It's like, you know, here's an awesome seat bag for bike packing. You know, it's got all these great features and this and that and the other thing, and they send it off to wherever to get made, and they're not really tested, and the stitching might be shitty. And I've seen it. I've seen, like, I had a frame bag made for me by Porcelain Rocket, who's now absorbed by Rockgeist. But that thing's still going. I still have that frame bag. And the zipper hasn't failed. And it's a beautiful piece of equipment, where I've had other people go and buy, like, the bigger brand frame bags and literally had the zipper fail the first time they tried to load it.
Right.
So it's, I would imagine that, you know, when you go out to these, it's just like buying craft beer or craft coffee or anything that's made in small batch. You're going to pay a little bit of a premium for that, but I think you're going to get a lifetime of use out of something like that rather than just have to replace it like in a season or two, you know? And I remember that with snowboards too, like, you know, buying, you know, big brand snowboard. And I lived in Whistler, and for the first couple of years I lived there, I was getting like, I don't know, like 60, 70, 80, 90 days on the board. Boards aren't made like that. They're not made to withstand that. You might get 30 days out of a board or 60 days before it just noodles out. But when you spend the money and like get something that's handcrafted or made, something really good, it's like, oh, so this is what this tool is supposed to, how this tool is supposed to perform. You know, it's not going to break down in a month. So, yeah, I mean, especially for people who are getting out there a lot, I think it's super important to put a lot of thought and invest in that gear. And I think, yeah, going with a small batch manufacturer is always the best way to go if you can afford it. I mean, there's some affordability issues with that, but that just comes with, you know, at least you know you're getting something that was made to last, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think too, for You get that when you have this really, like you say, Steve, the handcrafted commitment, and they've got, they're all in, you know, because they're they're doing that snowboarding 70 to 100 days themselves. The person that's making that snowboard, they understand exactly what you said. And I think, you know, we're in this time where we need to find other ways to create jobs. You know, we can't look at the extraction industry as the only way forward anymore. And we need to look at ways to create jobs for the future economy and the green economy in our province. And the outdoor industry is an incredible way to do that. You know, outdoor recreation is a significant and fast growing component of super the North American of the North American economy. And you know, it's a bunch of different activities. It's diverse. It's nature based. It's mostly rural, exactly where we're at. But we also make urban forms of recreation. The Arcraft gear makers in this region make gear that can be used in urban environments too. And it contributes to the economy in so many ways, you know. And one of the ones I really want to highlight on not only just the economic benefits of it, but the quality of life benefit. You know, when you have a craft gear maker or small mom and pop maker located in your community, they're the type of people that volunteer. They volunteer for trail building. They volunteer for cleanup days. They do things. They're doers, they're givers in your community. And so you're going to have the other spinoffs, obviously, from that quality of life for the greater community of having those people live there. But let's also not forget, when we're creating stuff for the outdoor economy, we're creating stuff that provides healthcare benefits, because people are using something to recreate, to exercise, to get physical and mental benefit from this. Obviously, there's the tax benefit and other for government. But I think, you know, we have to really look at how this fits really well. You know, we can't go and say, hey, we're going to try to get this for our community, but that this doesn't fit. But the outdoor economy fits really well within all of the communities across the Kootenai region. And I think it's and the outdoor economy is one of the first that's really supporting a whole bunch of diverse values that are really important today. You know, not only, you know, one that's really super important for many of us is the importance of the environment, the importance of diversity and inclusion of others in the outdoors, and the outdoor sport industry is really stepping up to the plate in that regard too.
Up here in Invermere, we've had some trail access challenges up here, and you know, just not to go super negative, but I'll turn it around. But the Greenways Trail Alliance here built this trail down West Side Road, right? And it's gonna it's gonna connect Invermere to Fairmont, and I would ride out there out that way quite a bit. But now, since that trail has been there, there's been so many people recreating on that trail, and of like families, and you know, people in their 70s will like pick up e-bikes and they're riding down there now. And so what you said is so true. It's like you can go to a community, go to a government and say, we really need this, but I don't think they really see the kickback to that. So it's like healthier, happier citizens who are less of a burden on the Medicare system, and just more, I think when people start getting out into nature more, they value nature more. So you're going to see less abuse, less, you know, garbage, you know, just more respect for the environment. Now that more people are getting out, it's been crazy. And especially through COVID, now you can't even buy anything. You can't even find bike stuff to buy, right? Because not only did the supply drop, but the demand just like went up probably tenfold, 100-fold. So to say that outdoor recreation is on the upswing is almost an understatement. It's like a rocket ship. It's just crazy right now. So we need these. We need these manufacturers to make us stuff because we can't get it anywhere else.
Right. You're absolutely right. And you're also right too, Steve. And that's good that we it's not without challenges. You know, we're acknowledging those challenges too. I mean, we will have to find ways forward and there are various groups, both in government and regional and local, i.e. clubs, even the bike clubs too, that are getting involved And one element, you know, one obvious one's the user conflicts, you know, and so there's a, I think as a, there's a whole, you know, what we're seeing is next level of education starting to happen, because we are seeing all these people use the trails as an example. So we're going to see more education to help people learn how to use the trails appropriately, depending on how they choose to use those trails and where are those trails specific to their interests. And I think we're going to see that happen. We're going to see hopefully too some more enforcement too, because I think people also respond to their enforcement's positive too as well, especially when you have more users. And really, it's you know, we got to do things right for the local people first. And so I think if we do it right for the locals, and then the understanding is that. Be part of this kind of the next level as we create trails and as we create and build gear. You know, part of that next step is okay. We also love having others come and enjoy this, because the more people we do get that enjoy the outdoors, the more people we have that care for the outdoors too. So that's really good. But we also have to help those people out in education and showing them that. How they can have a tradition of riding their mountain bike in a real positive way, and how they can do it in a way that is not only positive for themselves but positive for the environment and others. It's similar to what we're seeing right now, and it's, you know, really important is all the educational aspect that's coming forward to help people get into backcountry skiing, you know, and. Which is so vital right now, obviously, as we see unfolding, because there's so many people out wanting to backcountry ski for the first time.
Well, I find that I haven't snowboarded for a really long time, and most of that comes from an affordability aspect, right? Like, mm-hmm. I can't afford to do that. That's why I just ride bikes right now. I'm just a cyclist. If I had a bit more disposable income, rather. I was thinking about this the other day. It's like, man, if I just had a big chunk of change, I'd probably get into like split boarding or something and get out into the backcountry. I'm not much of a skier. I tallied a little bit, but I've always been a sideways guy. So I like being sideways, but, yeah, I can see how backcountry is becoming a big thing because, man, like skiing is like golf, you know, it's so expensive. To go and ride a chairlift all day for a lot of people, I think. So to be able to take your family out and basically go for a hike in the snow, you know, up to a cool bowl or something, and then get some freshies down there, like that's awesome. And mm-hmm. It's not as cost prohibitive as going to a resort and getting a hotel and buying lift tickets. And I think too, like I think Mother Nature is kind of, she's telling us that things are changing, and that we need to find more creative ways to get out. And recreate. And so I think this is all really good just to educate people on where they can find this recreation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's important. Yeah, and I think, you know, and I think you hit on another great one is this, we have to acknowledge the affordability piece too, kind of at all levels, not only affordable activity, affordable access, affordable sports, but also affordable housing. There's a bunch of baskets there. And I think we definitely need to see, you know, more, maybe some innovation, in policy and, you know, we're seeing it a little bit in housing and the type of housing that may be built. We're seeing, access, we have some, you know, movement happening for, adaptive cycling, you know, so that there's accessibility for all is possible and for all interests, and that's really important. And then, you know, and then there's a whole bunch of education that needs to happen around. So where can, you know, it was hard to get a used bike, but there used to be used bikes available. That's an affordable way into biking, you know, and where are places that people could buy used bikes? Same with ski gear, you know, affordable used ski gear. How do you get into a sport? When can you ski at your local resort or ski hill on a more affordable way? Is there specials? You know, so there's a lot of education that needs to happen still in those elements of that, because I do think, you know, we should be able to find ways to offer outdoor sports for all. And with that, there's got to be there is some heavy lifting that needs to happen at various levels to make that possible. And a lot of good work's being done by all the community cycling groups as a great example. A lot of work's being done by other groups in the throughout the Kootenays that are helping make possible hiking opportunities and trails and campsites and possibilities for people to get outside that maybe couldn't afford it before. So yeah, there's a lot of elements to this thing. I think, you know, it starts with us working on for CORE. You know, we're really focused on trying to get some economic development to happen, to provide some jobs for people in the mountain communities, and to share and showcase this incredible gear that's being made right here. Those are three baskets that we're really working hard on, and really stoked by our executive director, Kevin Pinnock, and his efforts, and then all the volunteer board members that have really kicked in their time to help assist with that.
That's awesome. So mechanically, there's this company and they're looking for a place to set up shop. In what ways is CORE going to help that business set up? Is it with economic stimulus or grants or tax breaks, or how is that looking for that?
That's a great question. One of the first steps is, I think, just letting people know. You know, it's kind of like a little bit more from the destination marketing organizations for your DMOs in your local communities. We've actually got to put the awareness out there to showcase the elements that are here. Why should you locate your small to mid-size outdoor gear maker here? And first of all, I think that's really highlighting and showcasing this incredible R&D that's here. So they right out your backyard is the best R&D you'll have, bar none, in North America. And so if you want to make the best gear for whitewater kayaking, this is where you want to be. If you want to make the best gear for fly fishing, boating, backcountry skiing, this is where you want to be. If you want to make the best bike packing gear, this is where you want to be. Gravel riding, this is where you want to be. So we're really raising the bar high on that to get, you know, and that's really working through small outdoor business groups. We are a member of various organizations and sharing then that we are happening, that this place and this region is open for business. And that gets it out to all those makers that are out there, you know, maybe making gear someplace else now. The second piece is if we get the person interested, say, hey, I want to move my company, I want to start making gear here, we have a whole bunch of resources that we provide them, you know, and we connect them with the community, first of all. You know, so here's the various communities that would be really good. You want to be a ski maker. Here's some great ski places to do that in. And then there, like you say, there's various pathways for support, small business loans, for design and R&D. There's community futures. There's a whole bunch of baskets of things that we're already connected with that we can put that craft gear maker in touch with. And that paves the way for them to make the next step and connecting them with that community and those community places so that they can make a decision on where they want to locate. Then the other aspect is resources and sourcing. So we're helping locate how they can get the appropriate inputs that they may need. You know, whether that's wood for making skis or is that all fabrication needs. So where would they, you know, where would they need or have access to certain types of fabrication or 3D models and printing and other type of stuff. And so there's various places in the Kootenay region that provide that services as well. And those places are open then for the gear maker to come in and use those labs and then do their R&D work or create their iterations or you know, new design samples that they may need to create. And so that helps them get in this place, get some connected, get some funding, get some sourcing for resources that they may need as far as inputs or also for R&D. Then the other thing is, there's also maybe someone in our region that already may have the interest. They're just not doing it yet. So we think it's really important just raising not only the level that this is an opportunity for you right here. So maybe you're doing one thing, but you're thinking about maybe I should be doing another thing. I've had this dream to make a bike packing bag for all my life. Well, we think if we make enough noise on this, that those people that are sitting there with that dream, you know, 1 out of 10 will come out of the dream state and say, I'm doing it. So if we can get enough of those who already live in our community to do that, we're already seeing that happen. And that's going to create more jobs for our communities and more opportunities. And the last thing is, as we generate awareness for those who are already making gear here, they're selling more gear. And the more gear they sell, then they're going to need to hire people. You know, they're going to upscale their business endeavor. So that helps the local community job market as well. Also helps the local community in infrastructure investment, et cetera.
Man, when you consider the trickle down effect of getting like one business coming in to do that, like just having the business coming in, providing jobs, providing work for other organizations who they need to do either the CNC work or the 3D modeling or marketing, printing, hats, t-shirts, yep. Like just the trickle down is like, I got these hats made locally here. And it's like that trickle down effect of stimulating one area, even into the, you know, the companies there, there's more people working there. They're shopping more. They're buying groceries locally. They're getting gas. Like it's just the trickle down for it's nothing but beneficial to a small town, especially the small towns we have with, you know, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people. You know, it's fantastic. And so that's great. You're like a welcome wagon.
Yeah, really? We are. We're the welcome wagon of swag, outdoor gear. Yeah. And that's exactly you hit it on the nail. It's that impact. A small company makes a big impact on our small communities, and they make a big difference. You know, so we're really proud of all the gear makers right now that we have in the Kootenai region. They're all amazing individuals. Running amazing businesses in their communities. And we, you know, outdoor recreation, Steve, it will continue to grow. And we think that this is going to continue to have incredible impact on our communities and into the future. And, you know, CORE is at the right time. We're just sharing what's already going on and what's already happening. And then we think we're going to be the spark that's going to bring more of it to the region and to British Columbia.
It's awesome. Awesome, honorable work. Do you have an example of a outdoor gear manufacturer recently that's moved to Kimberley that's kind of set the precedent for all this?
Well, you know, there as we a lot of things are happening right now, more so in the space of I've had this dream and you're kickstarting that inspiration. So that's what we're flushing out right now. We're having people, and I can't necessarily name, you know, all the different people that have already contacted us with their ideas. And there's a lot of stuff, you know, in the near term, it's going to pop up, whether it's a new bike maker, building frames and to the other ideas around climbing. We're seeing some design and testing that's going on in the Bugaboos and the Valhallas for rock climbing, you know, gear. You know, we're seeing things happen, and what we're hearing is because of our, you know, we started March, you know, really getting into it in a big way. You know, there's a proliferation of information that's happening and awareness that's happening. And we thank the crew at Kootenai Mountain Culture for sharing a lot of the stories that are happening about our various gear makers. This is really just gaining momentum. You know, it's like powering up that hill on a gravel bike. You know, we're hitting stride, we're hitting speed, and more people are joining in. And we're super excited about the momentum that's happening.
That's awesome. So exciting. Very exciting. And I'm glad. I appreciate what you said about me, you know, kickstarting it. I hopefully the people listen to this will, who maybe have been thinking about maybe starting a business, manufacturing something, will consider coming to the Kootenays. And, yeah, hopefully they'll hook up with the welcome wagon and get started. Cause it,
welcome wagon fantastic. Looks a little bit different. It's a beat up Toyota Land Cruiser with various varieties of racks on top for bikes, boats, and you name it, right? You know, and it is like, this is going to be, we're going to see such great success here in the next 5-6 months from small companies that we're going to, you know, start to really sprout. And so thank you for helping out, because it's continuing this momentum, and governments don't understand the outdoor industry either, you know, yet. They're going to, but they don't, you know, and many of them that live in places don't even, you know, really do the sports that we do, or understand, you know, the motivation behind why would people even do this? You know, they may walk or ride a trail, you know, a bike on a paved path or something like that for commuting. But the real momentum for our region will be more of the adventure sports, for sure. And that's really not understood well by a lot of people, but we can be a world leader in that segment.
I think what small communities need, and I think this goes for I can't speak a lot about the states or really anything political at all, but it seems like there needs to be more government representation in these regions that can translate what the citizens are asking for to these people in Ottawa. So that these bureaucrats, the suit and ties sitting behind the desk who are with the rubber stamp, actually know or actually can get a sense of the full impact of what the citizens are asking for. Because it's like, you know what, we really would like this plot of land to be sanctioned so we can go in there and put some trails in the dirt. And they're going to be IMBA standard. They're going to, you know, we're going to address erosion. We're going to address traffic. We're going to address blah, 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 blah. And it just seems like a lot of these requests just get boom. No, can't have that land.
Right.
Or, you know, there's land trades going on, or especially in a region like where we are in Invermere, we're surrounded by private land. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So access has been pretty tough, but I think having stronger government representation for outdoor recreation in these regions would be pretty valuable, I think.
Well, and that's part of what you hit it on the nail too. We're trying to achieve that through your support. Just even this hopefully someone from government or someone who works in government might be listening, and then they, you know, will share something. Hey, this is going on and happening, and then, you know, going down that deep dive to learn more about what we got going on here. Yeah, we've got something that's super powerful, and has the ability to impact so many people's lives around the world, not alone just in our own backyard, but in a good way, in a positive way. So thank you again, Steve. Appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It was great connecting with you. And next time you're up, drop me a line. Now you have my digits and we can get together for a coffee or something.
That'd be awesome. Look forward to it.
Right on. Okay.
Take care. I'm going to go get the dog out right now.
Right on.
He's got to go.
Okay.
Take care.
Take it easy. Peace.
Bye.
I want to thank Matt again for his time and thank all of you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Yeah, next time you're in Canada, you're traveling across Canada or within BC, come on over to the Kootenays and check it out. You're going to love it here. There's great trails in all these towns, great hiking, great rivers, awesome gravel. It's basically a outdoor recreation paradise, and I would encourage anyone to come. Look me up. Maybe we'll have a beer or something. I'd love to hang out and chat or ride bikes with anyone. I want to thank Cycling 101 for their support of the podcast again. And don't forget, if you want a consultation done on your existing training program, reach out to Ryan at Cycling 101, drop the code VIP50, and you're going to save 50% off that consultation. I also want to thank Dynamic Cyclist for being a supporter of the podcast. They're helping me, and I love what they're doing out there. They're helping riders ride better and pain-free. So why not head on over to dynamiccyclist.com, use the promo code MB40 at checkout, and you're going to save 25% off a stretching and mobility program. I also want to thank Rollingdale Cycle for supporting the podcast. Love you guys. Thanks so much. So That's all I've got for today. I want you to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Head on over to your favorite listening platform and give me a 5-star rating and a review. Helps me grow. And I just appreciate everyone's support. I have a dozen hats to sell. I'm not sure what I'm going to do with those yet, but if you're hearing this, I'm going to make them available pretty soon. Just haven't had time to sit down and sort that out. So that's all I've got. I love you. Thanks for tuning in. Ride safe, be well. And as always, keep the rubber side down.